Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island. For most kids, horror is often either a wholly objectionable genre, avoided at all costs, or it's a forbidden temptation, an adult world filled with blood, nudity, and nightmares. Horror concepts aimed at children are often done through the celebratory lens of Halloween, or are only lightly touched upon before being swept aside by usual comedic hijinks. Cartoons especially were saccharine affairs, light in tone and rarely offensive, allowing parents to trust that their kids glued to a television were in good hands. This, of course, all changed in 1998, with the release of Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island. Scooby-Doo was always a cartoon series that dabbled with horror concepts, episodes filled with ghosts, ghouls, monsters, and so on. But the threat was always mitigated by revealing to kids that the only actual monsters you'll encounter in life are other people. Scooby-Doo as a franchise had gone through a number of different iterations since the late 60s, including its high point, a pup named Scooby-Doo, but the formula had always stayed pretty much the same, although occasionally the Harlem Globetrotters would show up. This formula was clearly a winner for many years, and I myself, as a young lad, certainly enjoyed the classic hijinks of Mystery Inc. My innocence would finally be ripped away with Zombie Island, however, as now the monsters weren't just strange men in costumes. They were real. In fact, the commercials for Zombie Island were very clear that the monsters were real.
This time, the monsters are real.
And I knew that I had to see this. My innocence would again be violated 4 years later with the release of the live-action Scooby-Doo movie, but let's focus on Zombie Island for now. The film opens by highlighting the horror atmosphere right away. A violent storm, a dark castle on a hilltop, and an ominous soundtrack tells you that this isn't your grandpa's Scooby-Doo. Actually, that's how every Scooby-Doo episode opens. But you saw the commercials, so you know that this is going to be serious. Eventually, a door is violently ripped open by scaly green hands, revealing the Mystery Inc. gang shaking in terror. A chase scene ensues as this horrible, savage monster follows after our brave heroes, threatening to rip them limb from limb. The Scooby-Doo theme song kicks in to lighten the mood, but a simple soundtrack change could easily turn this into a proper horror movie. Fortunately for the gang, as we've seen hundreds of times, Scooby manages to inadvertently set off a chain reaction of events that knocks down the monster. While we all expected that this monster really was the real thing, we are once again disappointed as they rip off his mask, and I, as a child, was certain that they had blatantly lied on the commercials. The villain apparently was printing millions of counterfeit dollars in the basement, and he would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those meddling kids. Frankly, I expected a somewhat better explanation, considering he ripped apart a large wooden door while only wearing green gloves. Either way, we then see that this was all being retold on a talk show by Daphne, who has started her own television series with Fred. She explains that the Mystery Inc. gang all went their separate ways after becoming bored with mystery solving. Since Scooby-Doo seems to operate in a setting where practically every member of the police force is stunningly incompetent and unable to solve mysteries, leaving them instead to a group of teenagers, this is rather astonishing. Villains that Mystery Inc. have stopped have attempted grand theft, counterfeiting, embezzlement, emotional distress, harassment, assault, attempted murder, exploitation, smuggling, and plenty more. All of these villains literally would have gotten away with their crimes if not for these meddling kids, and these are only the criminals stupid enough to dress up as a clown to scare people away. Imagine what the intelligent criminals are getting away with in this world. With Mystery Inc. no longer stopping a criminal every week, it's hard to believe normal society is still continuing on. Regardless, with Daphne and Fred working on a television show about haunted places, Shaggy and Scooby have gotten jobs as airport security, with Scooby sniffing for contraband coming into the U.S. The only contraband they seem to find, however, is food, and they proceed to eat most of it. Their supervisor comes in and fires them, although I suspect this has less to do with them eating contraband, and more that they didn't share it with him. Velma, on the other hand, now runs a bookstore that specifically sells mystery novels, although she seems to be the most bored of the group with her new job. For Daphne's birthday, Fred manages to get the whole crew back together to hit the road one more time. They're heading to record the second season of Daphne's show, giving them an excuse to travel across the country and bust some more fake monsters. Perhaps I'm getting ahead of myself, however, and you're not familiar with the Mystery Inc. gang. Fred Jones, the suave and handsome leader, is voiced by Frank Welker, as always, who you might know as the voice of Pegasus in Hercules. Daphne Blake is the typical wealthy babe character, voiced here by Mary Kay Bergman, who you might know as the voice of the Fox in Balto 2, Wolf Quest. Velma Dinkley, who everyone over the age of 25 realizes is the actual babe, is the intellectual of the group, and therefore actually solves most of the mysteries. Velma is voiced by B.J. Ward, who you might know as the voice of Bodhi in Baldur's Gate 2. Shaggy Rogers, a cowardly slacker prior to his apotheosis, is voiced by Billy West, who you might know as the voice of Roger Klotz in Doug. Scooby-Doo, Shaggy's pet Great Dane that speaks with a speech impediment, is voiced by Scott Innes, who you might know as the voice of Scooby-Doo. Now that we've got all that covered, let's continue. The group's trip mostly takes the form of a montage featuring classic Scooby-Doo hijinks and an upbeat song telling us that the ghost is here, but it's fake. Daphne seems legitimately disappointed that the giant crab monster chasing them wasn't actually real. Finally, though, the group arrives in New Orleans, and Daphne is loudly whining that they have yet to find a real monster for her show. Considering her show is on its second season, I'm curious as to what exactly each episode contains. Regardless, a seductive young woman nearby eavesdrops and joins the conversations. This is Lena Dupre, voiced by Tara Strong, who you might know as the voice of the baby in Spirited Away. Lena works as a chef in a house on Moonscar Island, a house that really is haunted.
I work as a chef in a house on Moonscar Island, a house that really is haunted.
Moonscar Island is haunted by a pirate named Morgan Moonscar, who apparently died on the island, and haunts it, for some reason. Fred states that it's probably just some guy in an old pirate suit trying to scare off the local kids, as if that's a far more normal explanation. The group is desperate for a lead, so they're eager to go, but Velma hops in the van and Googles the island, finding that there have been a number of strange disappearances around there. Since this is a cartoon, that only excites the group further, aside from Shaggy and Scooby. They follow the strange woman out of town, into a bayou, something I never recommend doing, and come up to a ferry that will take them to the island. The ferryman, Jacques, is voiced by Jim Cummings, who you might know as the voice of Jingles in All Dogs Go to Heaven 2. Jacques very ominously tells the group that people go into the bayou and don't ever come out, which is a fairly common horror trope, even for kids. The group doesn't seem to be perturbed. While riding on the ferry, Jacques lets us know that pirates used to use this bayou to hide from the law, with Morgan Moonscar being the most famous of them. Scooby tries to grab a giant catfish, but instead causes him and Shaggy to fall in, right near a couple alligators. As most of the group is helpless to observe what will almost certainly be a bloodbath, Scooby and Shaggy are saved by a local fisherman that doesn't really care for tourists, named Snakebite Scruggs. Scruggs is voiced by Mark Hamill, who you might know as the voice of Captain Stickybeard on codename Kids Next Door. They finally arrive on Moonscar Island, accompanied by an ominous soundtrack. Lena takes them to the mansion, which is completely covered in cats. I'm not sure how the filmmakers got my idea of a dream house, but here it is. Scooby immediately chases off after some of the cats, tearing up the porch and the lawn like a typical dog. Scooby finishes by colliding with the owner of the house, Simone Lenoir. Simone is voiced by Adrian Barbeau, who you might know as the voice of Martha Wayne in Batman the Animated Series. Simone confirms the hauntedness of her house and invites the crew to come in and take a look around. Shaggy and Scooby are particularly intrigued by the news that Simone's plantation grows the hottest peppers in Louisiana. Shaggy pulls off an impressive feat of consuming the contents of a massive water jug in a few seconds. The hosts seem to be welcoming and friendly, so you know they're the villains. Some writing mysteriously appears on a wall, reading, "Get Out," which greatly excites Daphne as she was a big fan of that movie. Things become stranger when Velma suddenly lifts off of the ground for a few moments before crashing back down. While looking over the recorded footage, Daphne somehow notices something odd. Fred proceeds to darken the image and increase the sharpness, which allows everyone to see a clear image of a ghost cutting the words into the wall. Ghost hunting TV shows should take note of this simple trick. This is apparently the ghost of Morgan Moonscar, and although most of the group is convinced that this is a real haunting, Fred insists that it's probably some sort of hologram, which in 1998 would be even more impressive than an actual ghost. Velma, inquisitive as she is, proceeds to completely vandalize part of her host's home and scratches away part of the wall, revealing the word Maelstrom. Maelstrom, as we all know, is the name of Morgan Moonscar's pirate ship, which seems to have been taken apart and used to build the house. It's then revealed by Simone that supposedly Moonscar buried some undiscovered treasure on the island, which normally would be a very typical Scooby-Doo plot. But remember, this isn't your grandpa's Scooby-Doo. Since we've gone 45 seconds without seeing Scooby-Doo, we're given a scene where Scooby chases after some more cats, only to be outsmarted and humiliated because, well, obviously. Scooby once again irritates Snakebite Scruggs, who sicks his man-eating hog after Scooby and Shaggy. Well, unfortunate for the two of them, it is fortunate for plot development, as they fall into a random pit and discover a buried skeleton. Suddenly, a vortex of mythical green flame appears for a completely unexplained reason, causing the skeleton to gain some flesh and become a zombie. A pirate zombie. Rather than being grateful for his resurrection, as he should be, the undead form of Morgan Moonscar chases the two of them out of the pit. Yes, this is pretty remarkable for a children's cartoon, but perhaps even creepier is Scooby's impression of the zombie.
Like, it was horrible. That pirate Moonscar was like nothing but bones. And then, he got worse, like a zombie!
The crew reunites and talks to the gardener, Beau Neville, voiced by Cam Clark, who you might know as the voice of Snoopy in Snoopy the Musical. Scooby and Shaggy take everyone else to the pit, but of course it's empty. Velma casts doubt on Beau's alibi of being in the area, but the crew settles in for the night. Shaggy and Scooby see the ghost of Cervantes from Soul Calibur in their mirror, causing them to flee, as they clearly prefer Tekken. The crew, of course, don't find any ghosts upon inspection, but Velma does use her massive brain to discover a plaque on the other side of the mirror, and we learn that a Confederate regiment used the island during the Civil War. Most of the group has dinner, but since Scooby and Shaggy can't go 3 minutes without getting into trouble, Scooby chases some more cats and disrupts the whole thing. The two are sent out to the van to eat, and for some reason we're given an extended scene of them eating crawfish.
Mm.
A group of innocent cats pop by to watch them, which enrages Shaggy, causing him to start up the van and peel away from the house. After eating some more hot peppers, they dunk their heads into pure, unadulterated swamp water, and witness the emergence of a large number of pirate zombies. It's unclear if the pirate zombies actually have murderous intent, or if they simply are stunned speechless by the excitement of resurrection and just want to hug Shaggy and Scooby in happiness. Regardless, the two panic without asking and drive off. They soon get the van caught in mud and sprint through the bayou, only to run into Bo again. His steely stare and chiseled physique frightens the pair, and they continue running. The rest of the group hears screams and begin searching the bayou. They too find Bo, who inexplicably is wandering a zombie-infested bayou at night by himself. The group splits up to keep searching, with Velma sticking with Bo. Well, alone with her, he grabs her wrist with frightful intent, and therefore I hate him. It turns out he was just letting her know about the nearby quicksand, but still. Fred and Daphne, meanwhile, find the empty van, and Daphne is immediately grabbed by a zombie. She performs some sort of judo move, knocking the zombie out, which I didn't think was possible. They attempt to pull off the zombie's mask, suspecting it's just a man, but Fred ushers forth a surprising amount of strength and rips the zombie's head off. As expected, this wakes the zombie up, and the group is approached by both tourist zombies and pirate zombies, a dangerous combination. Fred's show of strength clearly disoriented him, as he quickly trips and drops the camera in quicksand. We're then given another musical montage of the crew being chased by zombies, a highlight of the film, set to the terrific track, It's Terror Time Again. You hear the screeching of an owl, you hear the wind begin to howl, you know there's zombies on the prowl, and it's terror time again, they've got you running. The zombies don't actually display any violent tendencies, but Fred and Daphne ignore this and proceed to use a tree branch to cut one of them in half. I hope no kids that saw that attempted to do it to their friends. Shaggy and Scooby end the montage in a cave, where they find voodoo dolls of the Mystery Inc. crew. As they pick them up and play with them, Fred, Daphne, and Velma lift off the ground and flail around. This could have easily ended completely horrifically, but Shaggy and Scooby get scared by bats and run away. The others reconvene back at the house, where the power is off. They find Lena in a secret passageway, because all cool houses have one, and she tells them that zombies attacked and dragged Simone away. Velma is, of course, immediately suspicious, because she's basically a female Sherlock Holmes, but they continue down the secret tunnel. They open a door and find a voodoo ritual room, where Velma reveals that she knows Lena is lying. Simone appears, and the two women use the dolls to incapacitate the group. This is where the plot gets pretty Call of Cthulhu. Simone reveals that she is going to use the crew as part of a ceremony that they've been performing for 200 years. It's then revealed that Simone and Lena are the actual monsters, furries. Simone says that every year she drains the life force of tourists to sustain her immortality. Apparently, they were originally settlers in this land, but Morgan Moonscar and his pirates arrived, and they drove most of the settlers into the bayou to be eaten by alligators. Lena and Simone survived and prayed to a cat god for vengeance against the pirates, causing them to become cat creatures. They proceeded to slaughter the pirates and use their powers to slay any visitors to the island, with Lena occasionally luring innocent people to become victims. It's at this point I'll remind you that this is a Scooby-Doo film. Shaggy and Scooby run into Jacques, who turns into basically a boss from Bloodborne. They're saved by a group of zombies, but Lena and Simone are about to drink the rest of the crew dry. Fortunately, I'll remind you that this is a Scooby-Doo film, and Shaggy and Scooby manage to roll through and save them. Lena and Simone don't care for this one bit, so they become Super Saiyan furries, chasing Scooby and Shaggy through the caves. The pair are once again saved by zombies, and it's clear at this point that we've misjudged zombies, as they're really our friends. Velma manages to get a hold of her voodoo doll and unties the rope around it with only her feet, because she's amazing. Shaggy and Scooby have to contend with all three cat people now, and Lena and Simone begin to cast the drain life spell on them. They're saved once again by Velma's quick thinking, as she managed to retool the voodoo dolls into affecting Lena and Simone. This only buys them some time, however, and it looks grim for the whole Mystery Inc. crew. Suddenly, the cat people begin to smoke and wither, as it's revealed that their time is up, since they didn't drain anyone. They squeal in agony as their flesh drains from their bones, and they crumble to dust, along with all the zombies, as you'd expect from a family-friendly Scooby-Doo film. The ghost of Cervantes shows up again for some reason to say thanks, and Daphne laments that they have no evidence for what happened, and no footage for her show. Bo reveals that he's actually a detective, working, I assume, for the Louisiana Police Department, investigating the disappearances on the island. Daphne asks if he would come on her show, which he seems to agree with, even though I doubt the police department would allow that. Everything is happy and awesome again, as Mystery Inc. sails away from the island, seemingly unaffected by the experience, as they passed all of their sanity rolls. Credits roll with "It's Terror Time Again" playing one more time, because it's great. After the credits, Scooby serves a couple cats a saucer of milk, as all dogs should. And there you have it. That's Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island. What lessons did this film impart to young kids such as myself? Well, zombies are our friends. Make sure to pray to the cat god to gain immortality. Pirates are really awesome. And Mystery Inc. would be really screwed without Velma. There was a shocking amount of horror concepts thrown around in this film, and it left an imprint on countless children that remember the movie fondly to this day. This movie was followed up a year later by Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost, which contained the Hex Girls, who taught young boys a completely different life lesson. Sadly, the Scooby-Doo franchise would only continue to slide down the proverbial tubes, filled with plenty of lame reboots and cash-ins. But maybe the real Zombie Island is the friends we made along the way.
You hear the screeching of a